This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. We're on location in Washington, D.C. My guest is journalist, novelist, and historian Martin Walker. His 12th book in the Bruno Chief of Police series is The Body in the Castle Well. This time, Bruno's case involves art, opioids, the American singer Josephine Baker, and of course, murder, World War II, and the resistance. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Tell us about Bruno and his mysteries of the French countryside. Who is he? How did he become your main character?
Well, before we move to the Périgord, most of my books had been typical journalistic books about Russia and Gorbachev or about American history or a history of the Cold War. But in the Périgord, I became fascinated with the caves, the prehistory, places like the Lascaux Cave, and wrote my first effort called The Caves of Périgord, which was trying to work out what kind of human society might have produced the masterpiece of Lascaux. And the more time I spent there, and I was going down to our local tennis club to play and attending games at the local rugby club, and I became a friend of a rather remarkable man who had been 10 years in the French army. He was a hunter, very good cook, spent his spare time teaching the local kids to play rugby and tennis, and he was the village policeman. And he's now my tennis partner. We're very good friends. And the moment I met him, I thought, this is a perfect character for a novel. And this is a perfect setting with the Périgord, with all of its history and its food and its wine and its traditions. And I thought, well, I've just got to put all this together and start writing crime stories, which I'd never done. And I wrote the first one, and I liked doing it, so I carried on.
You've traveled the world as a foreign correspondent, lived in many a big city. What is it that you like best about the small French village your characters call home, in addition to what you just said?
Well, it's the contrast between most of my life so far, which has been in cities, and it has been international politics and international relations and economics and so on. And for the first time in my life, I'm spending most of my time growing my own food, raising my own chickens, swapping my surplus eggs with friends who are fishermen for their fish from the river. I'm part of a village community which I find utterly charming, and it's the most revolutionary change in my life I could ever have imagined. But it's always seemed to me, I mean, my mum always told me when I was a very little boy, Martin, the world is big, life is short, go out and see as much as you can. One of the fun things about being a foreign correspondent was you could sort of change your life with every new country you were trying to understand and cover. And so I've changed my life again. And here I am in living the life of some person in the country who's trying to become more and more self-sufficient. And almost everything we eat there comes from within a mile or two of where we are.
How did this particular book come about?
Well, it came about with two reasons. One in which, when I'd been working in a think tank, I'd done a lot of work on demographics and the implications of massive aging and longevity, and the way in which declining birth rates mean that in most of the world we've got large numbers and growing numbers of old people, and fewer young ones to pay the taxes to support them. And yet, at the same time, there were enough of the old people who were quite wealthy that they were getting a huge gap in the quality of life between wealthy retirees and less so. And I, in the course of researching all of that, I visited one or two of these extremely luxurious retirement homes that have started to grow up. And I thought, well, that's interesting, and it won't be long before we see a chateau or two in the Périgord becoming one of these places. And then I'd met an old British rocker who had bought a chateau in the area not far from me back in the early 1970s. And I thought, old rocker, well, what have he? Has a younger wife, and she wants to divorce him so she can have a new life on her own. And what happens with their kids? Maybe they're having a last summer, family summer there. And then perhaps we bring in this idea of a retirement home. And suddenly the ideas, the cogs in my brain began to turn. It always begins with one idea or a second idea, and then I start to plan the plot. Or the plot starts to plan itself. It's a mysterious process. I wish I could define it more clearly, but I can't. I mean, you get a trigger until I have what I think of as the outline or the shape of what I want to write. But every year comes a Bruno book. So,
In this particular book, how did the opioid issue come up?
Well, I spent enough time in the U.S. to know what a scandal it was becoming here, what a problem it was becoming. And, you know, I always reel in shock at the number of Americans who are dying from gunshot wounds. Now, even more, are dying from opiates, which are being prescribed by doctors and sold by reputable drug companies and so on. And it just seems to be one of those things that was completely out of hand. And the more I looked at it, the more I began reading about it, the more I thought that this would be an interesting way to have a complicated death that Bruno would have to investigate. And I didn't like the idea initially of having a young American art student who died so soon, but there we are. That was the way that the thing worked out. And we go back into her life enough that we get a sense of who she was.
The area's history comes up in every book, especially World War II, often linked to Nazi evil. You have lots of German readers and visitors to the area. Do they comment on that?
Oh, yes. One of the extraordinary things about the whole Nazi time is that there's almost nobody left alive who was old enough to really understand what it was about. And it's a remarkable feature of post-war Germany is just how much they've been honest with themselves about it all. As a result, today's Germans don't feel any sense of guilt, and why should they? They weren't responsible, but they do feel a deep awareness of it. And it's the kind of awareness that reminds us that from time to time, countries just go crazy. France went crazy with Robespierre's terror, if you like. Italy went crazy with Mussolini. Germany went crazy. Some people think, and I think, that Britain's going through its turn now over Brexit. It's just the way it is, but a lot less damaging than what the Nazis did in Germany. But it's interesting that the Germans like the place so much, and that the huge sales of my books tend to be much more outside France than inside it. But I just love this French history. I mean, it is a country with extraordinary amounts of history. And the place where I'm setting the novel, which is the hillside of the hilltop old fortress of Limoges, it's not just there's been a fortress there since before Julius Caesar's legion stormed the Gauls' fortress, but it just went on and on. Charlemagne built one there, the Middle Ages built one there, the Wars of Religion, and, of course, there were the archaeologists found this amazing cache of hundreds of small stones, flat stones about the size of a man's hand, on each of which were engraved either a mammoth or a horse or a deer. And the only explanation that they have for why there were so many of these things, all almost identical, was that it must have been the world's first art school 12,000 years ago, where people were learning how to make these designs. And for me, that's just, my jaw just drops at the thought of what kind of society and life people had back in those days. And what kind of society could have produced these masterpieces? I mean, the very first art that we see is the cave art. First time the humans deliberately set out to create something, whether it was magic or spiritual, we don't know, but it's clearly art. And I'm just awed by this, as I'm also constantly struck by the power and the drama of so much of French history. And in the Dordogne, in the Périgord, we have more than probably anywhere else on earth of history.
You mentioned that along with writing books, you work at a think tank. You mentioned some of the work you do there.
And I'm partly retired from that now that I'm writing my books, but I still have some clients that I go and talk to about the future, and including one of my great hobbies, which is the future of artificial intelligence and robotics. And after a project with the German government I'd done on that, I turned the study into a novel called Germany 2064, which became a bestseller in Germany.
Well, thank you. My guest is Martin Walker, author of The Body in the Castle Well, published by Knopf. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.